So, thanks for introducing the talk. It's a funny old thing writing a Dharma talk, actually. I've done a few of these sort of in the young people's events, and then I can find that sometimes you can kind of dream a talk and you wake up in the morning and it's all kind of sorted out and neat. And I found with this talk, which sometimes happens, it's a bit more sort of hard won. And I think that's because I'm kind of reflecting on an experience I had at Guhyaloka over the 4 months, which I'm still kind of working out in a way. Sort of come back 5 weeks ago, and I've got a sense that the kind of working out of that is going to be kind of much longer term. So consequently, I've got not such a worked out talk. I'm still writing it this morning. That thing on mandalas is quite good. I was thinking, oh yeah, I could put that in. Mandala. So I'm slightly anxious, but I'm also sort of excited about giving this talk. So we'll see how we go. So as Arthur City said, the sort of course at Guhyaloka was sort of represented quite a sort of simplification of my life. That's sort of part of what you do when you go on retreat. You're sort of simplifying your conditions. So I'm going to be reflecting on that and sharing some of my experience of that, really. And then coming back to Cambridge, there's sort of threads of practice that I've sort of continued from Guhyaloka. I'll say a little bit about that as well. But I wanted to just start with talking about sort of simplicity of lifestyle and kind of defining that initially, and then I'll get onto the rest of the talk. And I was reading Subhuti's Buddhist manifesto, and basically sort of simplicity of lifestyle. It's a sort of it's one aspect of renunciation. That's one way of sort of talking about simplicity of lifestyle. But we didn't put sort of renunciation in the title for the talk because I wasn't sure if people would be attracted to that idea. I don't know if renunciation is a kind of attractive idea to us in sort of practicing Buddhism in our sort of conditions in the West. So Subhuti defines simplicity of lifestyle as eliminating whatever is unnecessary to Dharma practice. So eliminating unnecessary accumulation of possessions and activities that distract us, basically, from our practice. But he says, simplicity of lifestyle does not mean deprivation or degradation. A simple life should be healthy and full of uncomplicated, dignified and inexpensive beauty, an elegant simplicity. And I was just sort of really struck by that, actually, this idea that a simple life could be elegant and beautiful. Yeah, so with renunciation, is it a sort of popular topic? I don't think it is. Is it attractive to us as Dharma practitioners? Do we sort of over-identify renunciation with giving something up? Do we see sort of renunciation and living a simpler life as elegant and beautiful? And as a sort of image for this, I think it's as if, and sort of speaking for how I sort of see renunciation as well, it's as if we're sort of carrying around a really heavy stone and we don't believe that putting it down is going to bring us relief. I think that's how in general we sort of see renunciation. And a sort of example of this, 4 or 5 years ago, I wanted to give up alcohol. I wanted to give up drinking. I used to be quite a big drinker. And it sort of required quite a lot of effort to give it up. It required quite a lot of patience and quite a lot of support from friends. It sort of required a sort of certain sort of faith that it was worth doing. But then the relief came later when I sort of started a meditation practice, a daily meditation practice. I sort of realised that drinking was affecting my meditation, and I actually preferred to have clearer states of mind. I preferred to have a healthy meditation practice. And then it became quite easy to give up alcohol. And a lot of pleasure and joy has come since then. The relief of kind of giving up drinking has kind of come later. But it wasn't like that initially. And another sort of image from Maitreya Bandhu in the journey and the guide for renunciation. And I really sort of like this image. He talks about the journey of the spiritual life being a movement from suburbia towards the mountain. So it's as if we're sort of stuck in our suburban lifestyles, but we want the mountain. But he says we can't drive to the mountains without leaving the suburbs. And it might be obvious as well, but I really like this image because it kind of literally describes my journey to Gukhiloka from the suburbs of Cambridge. But yeah, it's a sort of image. We have to leave behind the suburbs in order to travel to the mountains. And renunciation, it's just it's a key Buddhist teaching. It's kind of in the canon, right through the canon. And there was a reading from Gukhiloka that I sort of really resonated with when it was read out during a puja. And this is a story of the Buddha before he was enlightened. So he was Gotama. After he'd gone forth, he'd gone from the home life into homelessness, and he was walking through a city, and King Bimbisara caught sight of him. And he noticed that Gotama was endowed with beauty and stature like a well-born Katiya. So a Katiya is a warrior. So he was attracted by the Buddha, and he sent out his messengers to kind of work out kind of who this man was and where he was going. And Gotama was kind of located to be, he was staying on the Pandava mountain, and King Bimbisara then kind of, his messengers came back. King Bimbisara then went out to meet the Buddha, and he asked the Buddha where he was from. So the Buddha replies, "I am by clan Sola. By birth, I am a Shakyan. I have gone forth from that family, O King, not longing for sensual pleasures. Having seen the danger in sensual pleasures, having seen renunciation as security, I will go for that purpose of striving. It is here that my mind delights." Yeah, so I just found that reading really sort of striking, that the Buddha kind of delights in renunciation. And there was also something about being at Gukhiloka that I could really sort of resonate with with that reading. I'll say a little bit more about that in a moment. But yeah, just want to sort of, and we're going to have some reflection in the second half of today. So maybe this is a question that we could kind of discuss. But do we sort of associate sort of living a simple life? Do we associate renunciation with delight? I know that I certainly didn't for quite some time actually. And I've sort of been surprised. I stayed last year for a few months in Padmakula with Artacity and Moksha Gosha as well, the community just over the road. And I had a really small room there, so I only took a few possessions, and I was actually really surprised how sort of delightful it was. It was like a kind of weight was kind of lifted from my shoulders or something, and I sort of loved every sort of item of mine, every sort of possession that I took with me. So I've been sort of surprised by simplifying my life and how kind of pleasurable it is. So yeah, there's also the Buddha's mentioning pleasure, and before I sort of get on to talking about Gukhiloka, I just wanted to explore this a little bit more as well. So I guess what I wanted to sort of say in this section is like, just pleasure and enjoyment, it's just really important in the spiritual life actually. Just it's been really important for me that I've really sort of enjoyed living the life that I live and enjoyed my practice. So renunciation needs to include pleasure. If we're a bit like in the example I was giving earlier with giving up alcohol, I sort of needed something more pleasurable in order to be able to kind of move away from giving up drinking. And those things are sort of, were meditation and friendship. And another quote from Subhuti. This is from the super personal 4, he's quoting Sangharakshita, he says that, well, Sangharakshita has said that one should not attempt to give up the lower pleasures of life until one has had a definite experience of the higher. The consequences otherwise are likely to be psychological distortion of one kind or another. So he's describing this movement from lower pleasures to higher pleasures, probably a bit like the movement from suburbia to the mountains. And the reason we can include pleasure in the spiritual life is that actually pleasure is sort of relatively superficial, actually. It's the attachment to things that causes problems. It's the attachment itself that brings us suffering. That's the sort of danger in sensual pleasures that the Buddha refers to. And Subhuti then goes on to talk about this self-attachment in a really sort of interesting way, actually. And so this is also from the Superpersonal Force. And he's talking about ego clinging as the sort of deep structure of our consciousness and how this kind of forms the world around us. He says that we solidify ourselves in our environments, patterning them to our shape. Although, oddly, our self-attachment may crystallise in worlds that give us a lot of pain and that we ourselves may rail against. I might read that again, actually. So we solidify ourselves in our environments, patterning them to our shape. Although, oddly, our self-attachment may crystallise in worlds that give us a lot of pain and that we ourselves may rail against. So then Subhuti then goes on to sort of make the point that a life of renunciation, a life that's been simplified, it resists this kind of solidification of self in the world. And that allows us to work more sort of directly on the sort of the underlying sort of substructure of self-attachment. And an image for this that Artapriya, who led our course, gave us was the image of a kind of jelly mould. So we're the jelly and we pour ourselves into a particular mould, we're a sort of particular shape in the world, and that kind of reflects back ourselves to us. And I just wanted to kind of unpack these points about renunciation and living a simple life. Because I'm going to illustrate those with my experience of being at Guhyaloka over the summer. And as I said, I'm going to then go on to talk about sort of how that's kind of affecting me now I'm back in Cambridge and what sort of threads of practice I've been working on coming back. And this is the sort of part of the talk I've been least looking forward to in a way, because in a sense, I've not been back very long. It still feels quite provisional being back, actually. I've been back 5 weeks. And I was sort of saying to someone last night, actually, like, I'm kind of all right being back, because Guhyaloka, in one sense, it's just a sort of a valley in the mountains in Spain. But there's a kind of myth of Guhyaloka that I think I'm sort of still in touch with. It's still kind of with me. There's a kind of Guhyaloka that's kind of still sort of contained, sort of in the heart, to use that language. And sort of Guhya translates as secret. It can also be translated as mysterious. So some of what I'll be talking about, it might be kind of quite difficult for me to sort of talk about, but I'll give it a go. So back in April, on Artist City's birthday, actually, 3rd of April, 21 of us walked up the mountain into Guhyaloka, and we were about to spend 16 weeks on retreat together. And I remember talking to Artapriya, actually, before we left. He sort of said, getting ordained, it's a bit of a palaver. And ordaining someone is a bit of a palaver, which I found quite funny, but reflecting on it, it is a bit of a palaver, actually. It's not that easy, kind of leaving a kind of life behind for 4 months. There's people to say goodbye to. You have to kind of wrap up your kind of working life. There's the sort of explaining to people what getting ordained means, all that sort of stuff, discussions with family. And I think that, in a way, that's sort of the first sort of renunciation. That's the first part of kind of simplifying one's life when you kind of go off to get ordained. And then I found the sort of the simplification of my life, the sort of renunciation, it was kind of progressive. So we handed in all our possessions, our phone and keys and wallet. I'd taken sort of minimal possessions with me, very simple clothing. And then we then went on to take on robes. So we there was a sort of further renunciation of in that sort of area. And then some of us shaved our heads, shaved our beards. Some of us have retained the shaved heads since then. And then later on, I also decided to take the Brahmacharya vow. So that's a vow not to engage in any sexual activity of body, speech and mind. So a kind of full practice in the area of the kind of the third precept. And there was sort of what to say about that, really. I mean, taking the robes, for example, I just found the sort of effect of wearing robes a bit of a surprise, actually. I hadn't really thought much about it beforehand. I just thought, oh yeah, we're in the mountains practicing together, we'll just wear robes, that's kind of obvious. But it was actually really delightful. It was a real sort of joy to kind of look around and see everyone wearing robes. In a sense, there's a sort of aesthetic quality to kind of being there with the other guys that I don't think would have been there if we weren't wearing the robes. I remember Moksha Gosha here, who we were ordained together. I remember seeing Moksha Gosha just sort of brighten up. It's almost sort of daily, every day, sort of getting sort of brighter and brighter, kind of looking much more sort of noble. And I was just really sort of delighting in that, actually. It was really, really sort of pleasurable to see a friend kind of sort of almost sort of transforming in front of your eyes. But it's quite interesting. It's not a sort of you can't kind of say what that, it's difficult to say exactly what is pleasurable about that anyway until you sort of experience it. I mean, maybe some of you might have experiences on retreat where you've seen people transform over a weekend on the Sunday when everyone's kind of buoyant. You can kind of delight in that. I remember there was another discussion we had had, myself and Moksha Gosha, and we were just saying, gosh, getting rid of all our possessions and renunciation, it just really works. And it was difficult to kind of say exactly what works about it, but it was just really, really delightful, really sort of pleasurable. And I was sort of talking just a moment ago about renunciation being about working on self-attachment. And I mean, there were sort of formal practices supporting this. So we were doing the six element practice. And then there was other sort of off the cushion practices. But I think a significant part of working on sort of self-attachment was the sort of renunciation, actually. As I was trying to illustrate in the sort of Subhuti example, it's almost like you're stripping away that kind of jelly mold, that kind of your usual sort of reference points, and what you get left with is you're sort of your own mind, the workings of your own mind. And the fact that we were all doing that, and we were doing that in a community, there was a kind of collective life, just brings about this kind of intensity of practice in that sort of area. So for me, really familiar habits were shown up, perfectionism, my approval seeking, competitiveness, all the ugly stuff, all really familiar. But given the sort of intensity of the practice, the sort of the daily program that we were engaging with, and the conditions, and being with all of the other men doing the same thing, I just sort of saw all of that much more deeply, actually. And the fact that we were all off getting ordained, the fact that it was coming up quite strongly at times, it was actually just quite sort of humiliating at times. There was sort of examples I could give where it was just really, really sort of challenging. So yeah, on a sort of personal level, yeah, there was kind of lots of ups and downs actually. But I always got a kind of sense that there's something really, really sort of positive going on, sort of even in the really sort of challenging moments. Yeah, and by the sort of middle of the course, my sort of reference points had kind of gone. Actually, I sort of couldn't. I didn't quite sort of recognise myself in. Sort of certain situations. I think kind of the effect of living that kind of simple life and the collective life, that being sort of a shared sort of simple life, really sort of meant that my sort of experience of myself just got really loosened up. My sort of views about myself, and I'd find myself just sort of doing surprising things. I didn't kind of recognise myself at times. Yeah, and sometimes, yeah, as I was saying, really painful. But there was just moments of bliss and beauty as well. And the beauty sometimes is just so intense. I've written here, they were almost unbearable. Which is quite funny, isn't it, really? But it was true. But yeah, gradually I just stopped identifying so much with that kind of way of relating, the sort of the painfulness and the sort of the bliss. I kind of stopped identifying so strongly with one or other of those poles, and just this deeper contentment started to come through. There was just this kind of sense of purpose that was kind of moving me forward. And I think one constant with that was just the sense of harmony within the community. Actually, I think that was just one of my overall experiences of the course, is just this really, really sort of deep sense of kind of harmony in the group. And there's just one example I remember was one day, it was after one of the meditation periods, we were all just tuning in, and it was really strange because everyone seemed to have just deepened into a particular place in their practice. I think there was a definite kind of softening of people, and there was just this atmosphere of kind of harmony, kind of was sort of created. Yeah, and there was sort of more depth in people's communication. It was very, very sort of tangible kind of deepening. And there was another example I remember when we were doing a study group together. Arthur City was leading a study group. And I mean, sometimes in study group, you don't quite get there, but you probably can all relate to this, where you get these moments where somehow the group just kind of comes alive, and it's as if there's something kind of greater than the group that's kind of present kind of with you or something. Everyone's engaging in a sort of particular way, where a particular kind of atmosphere is created. You might have had experiences of that yourself, where you're kind of practicing yourself. You're trying to kind of go beyond your own sort of limited sort of opinions. That sort of thing. Your sort of your sense of yourself in the group. Well, this sort of happened, and there was just a moment where we all just fell into silence, and it was as if no one could kind of say anything. We just had to sit and let the kind of silence roll out to the end of the group. And the way I've sort of been thinking about this is, just that there was just a sort of an arising of a kind of sense of beauty. I often referred to living at Gukhiloka as the beautiful life. So I've used the simple life, the collective life, and the beautiful life. I haven't written this down, actually. It's not even really part of the talk, but anyway, that sounds quite good, doesn't it? You could write a paper on that or something. But yeah, just this sense that there was this kind of atmosphere created that we were all sort of participating in together, something greater and sort of more beautiful. And I think that really, just to bring it back to the kind of title of the talk, it's difficult to do that in the complicated world that we live in. I think it requires particular conditions. It requires conditions of simplicity of lifestyle and the renunciation that kind of represents, and a collective endeavour, actually. I'm sure we've all got experiences of this, going on retreat, feeling a bit like you don't want to be there on the Friday night or whatever, and sort of maybe worrying about something that's, you know, very sort of personal. And then over even just the course of a weekend, that just transforming, and then having a sense on the Sunday of just this sort of collective life, and that being really, really pleasurable. You know, I think we've all got examples of that sort of happening. Yeah, just want to sort of, before I get on to talking about coming back to Cambridge, wanted to also reference Subhuti's recent talks on the Bodhisattva ideal. He sort of just draws out in those talks that we're so sort of individualist in our culture, that sort of in modern Buddhism, we've got to really make sure we don't sort of play into that sort of individualism. And I just feel like in joining the order, there's this collective project that I'm sort of now participating in. I was participating in it before, but I've committed to participating in this collective project, and that's represented by the thousand-armed Avalokiteshvara, the image of which we've got on the shrine, where each order member is a hand of Avalokiteshvara. And Subhuti talks about this image as being a much healthier image for us, rather than thinking that we're going to achieve enlightenment or we're going to become a bodhisattva, because of our sort of Western conditioning. This idea that we're renouncing, we're giving up sort of individualism in order to bring about the bodhicitta, the bodhisattva. So now I'm back in Cambridge. That's what I'm trying to do. And I'm aware of the time as well, but I've just got a little bit to say in this section. And it's a funny old time actually coming back. Sort of got a sense that the world is sort of trying to kind of rush in and sort of cover over a sort of deeper experience of myself. So I'm both kind of trying to sort of engage with that full on, but I've also got a sense I'm sort of resisting that too. I think the area I'm mainly trying to sort of stay open to is where there's sort of painful experience. I'm just making sure I'm not covering that over with distraction, basically. But I've also got a sense that I'm really robust, and there is a kind of momentum that's kind of carried on from the course and from being ordained. And I've just got a really strong urge to want to kind of simplify my life, actually, to resist that kind of shape of the jelly mold, that kind of old life that's trying to kind of assert itself. I could very easily just pour myself back into that. So, yeah, I'm trying to kind of resist that kind of shape. And there's just some really simple examples. I'm just trying to reduce my possessions at the moment, particularly possessions that don't kind of meet that kind of myth of being in the order. So there's old things I'm kind of just getting rid of. I had a conversation with Artapri about books. Lots of books, huh?
You want some more books here?
some of them have made their way here, actually. Yeah. And thank you for the encouragement. Much appreciated. Very good spiritual friendship. So there's books, isn't there? We've probably all got books that we've been putting off reading. So it would be really good if I read that. And some of the books I've had, it's like they're just an old, outdated view of myself that actually it's just a real relief to get rid of them. It's like, I don't really want to read those books. And then there's possessions. I've been selling, I've sold my saxophone that I haven't played for 20 years. And it was a bit painful actually getting rid of it, but I feel like clearer having cleared out stuff like that actually. I haven't managed to sell my jazz organ yet. So if anyone's in the market for a jazz organ, do let me know. But do make sure it's not just accumulating possessions. And with my working life as well, so I work as an architect, so I work on computer quite a lot. So I've been really making sure that I'm using emails in an appropriate way. I think I can, personally, I can fall into using emails in a particular way where it's just selfing. It's just me asserting myself. And yeah, I think I've noticed anyway myself that it can really sort of cover kind of a more true kind of communication. I sometimes email my colleagues, you know, that's mad, isn't it? I email my colleagues who are sitting sort of a couple of chairs away. So I'm resisting doing that and actually, you know, having human contact with people. I'm sort of making that a priority. I've come off Facebook, and I'm in the process of removing all of my other sort of social media. I just want to kind of have a bit of a clear out. So they're just some examples, of how I'm sort of practically kind of trying to live a kind of simpler life. But I did mention the collective life, and I just want to end on sort of the collective life, because I think in a way, like, maybe this idea of the simple life, maybe it's just not a big enough myth to kind of contain us. Actually, I think for myself, I need a kind of bigger myth than that. And this collective, living a more collective life, I think that's where I want to kind of move towards. So I'm sort of simplifying in order that I can give myself over to the collective life. So this just includes, just going to my chapter whenever I can, really giving myself to that, and confession practice, supporting other people in their practice through friendship, that sort of thing. And I've just got two examples in this area, actually, which illustrate this. Very soon after getting back from Guyuloka, I went to see my parents, and I took them to the pub. They love going to the pub, my parents do. And I drove, which they were delighted about because they could both drink. And so we were at the pub, I found myself getting really sort of distracted, because there was this group of guys all together. I was trying to work out kind of how they knew each other, and they were all just sort of sitting there together, just kind of just sort of at the pub having a drink. And I just felt this kind of sadness come over me. It's really, really interesting, actually. They were really good friends. There wasn't any sort of crass communication or anything, but I just realised, I was sort of trying to work out what this sadness is about, and I sort of realised that my life kind of could have been about going to the pub and having quite meaningless conversation, actually, you know, fairly sort of you know, friendly and all the rest of it, but not sort of penetrating any sort of deeper than that. And but yeah, like I say, I'm sure they were all lovely blokes. And then last weekend I went to the Order weekend, and I saw all the guys from Guyuloka again. There was quite a lot of us there, actually. There's Arta City and Arta Priya, who were on the course, were there. And out of the 13 guys from England, 12 of us were there, which was really fantastic. And I just felt really buoyed up, actually. I just felt really, really sort of buoyed up by being with the guys again. And it wasn't like we were a kind of clique. It was something about being there all together, but being part of the order, which just really, really lifted me up. Just felt really sort of buoyed up in the heart. I couldn't sleep on the Friday night. In fact, I felt like I was kind of floating or something. It was like I was just being kind of lifted. Yeah, and I just had this kind of feeling of coming home, actually. Yeah, I just felt like I sort of didn't need anything else in the world, actually. So that's pretty much it. But in summary, I just wonder whether, do we need to kind of update the way we think about sort of renunciation? That's my sort of question. I mean, there is a sort of prevailing sort of mood of nihilism in our sort of culture, isn't there? So do we focus on kind of giving up too much rather than what we kind of get? Yeah, and Artur Priya actually said to me at the sort of end of the course, he said, ordination costs. And I was quite shocked by that, actually. And but I've been reflecting on this, and I think maybe there is a cost, actually. Maybe the cost is the sort of individualistic private life. But I think, yeah, I don't know. For me, it's like, it's sort of worth it, you know, sort of the collective life, you know, it can be challenging, but it's also sort of beautiful and deeply, deeply satisfying, actually. And, yeah, I just feel like I've been put in contact with something really, really sort of precious with my ordination. Yeah, it's also just like really deeply sort of mysterious and still being kind of worked out as well. And yeah, so maybe with renunciation, we need a bigger vision. Yeah, we need this sort of bigger vision of the collective life. And yeah, I think, you know, I've just said like mandala, that's really good. I'll put that in the talk. Just bringing it back to this kind of group, I think we've kind of got a problem actually with modern masculinity. I think it's not, you know, it's quite easy being a man in the world in some ways, but also it's quite difficult, I think, being a man in this world. I don't think it's particularly sort of easy. We have the, you know, expectations to kind of succeed and compete. And yet, you know, we have to be sort of sensitive and, you know, a good father and, you know, all these sorts of things. And I think masculinity, I think there's a very sort of confused message these days. So, yeah, that's why I want to put energy into this group. I just think, the idea of the mandala is just a really sort of healthy kind of vision for modern masculinity, moving from the individual at the centre to something that's more kind of collective. I have the three jewels at the centre. So, yes, I probably should stop there. So,